Welcome to the Joe Cohen Show. Join me as I share my experience with biohacking and invite top health experts to explore the latest technology, supplements, research, and resources for optimizing your body and brain.
Okay. So, did you try or plan to hyperdose copper for skin and hair health? The way I do my health right now, the way I take everything right now, is I actually will search on Self-Decode. We have a good recommendations feature. And I see all of the benefits, the clinical trials. For example, let's say if I am going to be interested in skin health, let me share my full screen here. So for example, let's say somebody's interested in skin health. So I'm going to go to the DNA Health Reports. And it's not a coincidence that I'm using Self-Decode. The idea for Self-Decode was to give people a platform to be able to solve their problems, right? If they have certain health issues, you want to know all the clinical trials that for natural products that can help with something, but also you want recommendations that are more suited for you personally. So that's where the genetics comes in. We also can give you recommendations for all your genetics as well, all your genetic weaknesses. But depending on what level you're at, if you're just someone who wants something, just the basics, you could click on this summary report for skin and beauty, and there's going to be recommendations there. So people ask me, what are my recommendations on things? And one thing I realized is that where I go to find recommendations is actually here. And this, for example, there's 50 recommendations, right? So it's like, what are my recommendations for skin health? We could, first of all, there's a whole bunch of different things, right? So we could go to each one of these and see the recommendations for each one of these. And so let's see, the person asked about, they weren't specific. It's just skin and hair health. And they were talking about hyperdosing copper. But basically what I would see is, what do I want here? And so here's a bunch of recommendations for, let's say, skin health. Copper is one of them. Zinc is one of them. As you can see here, zinc is number 3, which means it's going to have a bigger impact than copper. But sometimes you don't know. They do need to be in balance. And you have to do a blood test to see if they're in balance. I find that serum copper and serum zinc are a decent measure. So I think both of those are good blood tests. But let's see here. So yeah, so basically there's 50 recommendations for skin health. So these are my recommendations because these are what have clinical trials, essentially. Double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trials. And I would go here and they're organized based on some genetic priorities, but also based on the strength of the impact and the evidence. So this is if you want to go to a broad report, but let's say if you want to search, you could search for skin and you could go to, for example, let's say something like this, facial wrinkles, and you can be able to get recommendations just for this, which there's 41 recommendations for facial wrinkles. And so I would go based on this. In terms of facial wrinkles, I don't see zinc here, but you could also click on any of these and it's going to give you more information. So if you click on this, give you more information of what the evidence is. All these R's are references for the evidence, and you could see more evidence there. Okay, so let's see. Out of these, I'm doing quite a lot of these. I find that it's clinical trials are especially important for something that's hard to figure out the effect in a short amount of time. So you definitely want to look at some clinical trials there. But yeah, so this is how I will look at something like skin health. Let's go on to another topic. And I think this is a good example because people ask me all the time, what do you think is good for X, Y, Z? And my answer is check Self-Decode. Really, that's what I do as well. I'll check Self-Decode, look at all the recommendations, see, go one by one. Okay. You can add them to a regimen by clicking these pluses and it'll be in your action plan right here. Next question. So what additional info does a self-decode DNA sample give over 23andMe data? Currently have 23andMe data uploaded. Basically, when we get the data directly from the lab, we can impute it better. That means we can infer the other SNPs better. So it's around 10% to 15% more accurate in terms of the results, in terms of the polygenic risk scores. So if that's important to somebody, then they should get our kit. If not, they can continue at with, you know, just having 23andMe data or something like that. But obviously, if they don't have a kit already, then they should definitely get ours. Next, is it bad if you have very low overall DNA score? No, because you could always improve what your genetics is. So it's just about finding your genetic weaknesses, and then you can improve upon that. Hi, Joe. I would love to know how you use boron in your regimen to raise hormones. So something that I would do here is you can look at boron. I will search for something like boron, and it shows you the clinical trials. Currently, the only clinical trial, double-blind placebo-controlled clinical trial for boron is memory performance. Now, I asked the team to input boron for testosterone, but actually there's no clinical trials for it, double-blind placebo-controlled. Some of them actually have that show that it doesn't increase any hormones, but actually there's one that shows that it might increase free testosterone, so that's newly added. Hi, Joe and colleagues. Could there be an overview of heavy metal detox genes like NQ01, for example, for mercury? The problem with doing some of these gene reports is that there's no real evidence for them. It's all theory. So somebody wants to do a heavy metal detox like NQ01. The problem is that we'd be basing our information on theories and not any concrete evidence. So it's a little difficult to create reports on these subjects. Basically, the way self-decode is made is that we can only work off of solid evidence. And if when it comes to specific gene reports, they're not as solid. Now, we might create some in the future. We probably will, but I'm gonna have to see how that would work. It's gonna definitely be more hypothesis-based, less meaning the science, the level of the science is gonna have to be less. Okay, so somebody says that self-decode is not showing standard gene names. That's not actually true. When you think of something, when a SNP is attached to a gene, it's only generally an association, meaning there's each variant can actually have many impacts on many genes, right? They're just associating it with a single gene. And so actually there could be 40 genes associated with a variant. It could have an impact on 100 genes, right? There's no amount of genes. Then there's how strong the association is. And so there's different methods of categorizing the association. What we did is we took the most reliable database and we created, we ranked it by the magnitude of the association. Now, sometimes those are going to be different than other things that other studies or whatnot. But since that's automatic, there's not that much we could do about that. Okay, compare self-decode tests and their actionable reports versus the DNA company test and their actionable reports. What do self-decode reports have that DNA company reports don't have? And vice versa, the self-decode tests for everything. Okay, so somebody's asking me here, what is the difference between the DNA company and self-decode? I shall explain. So the DNA company tests for 83 genetic variants. It's a very specific test for specific things. I don't know all the genetic variants that they test for. That is something that they hold secret. And actually, yeah, so I don't know all the genetic variants that they test for, but they test for 83 genetic variants. And I don't know how useful each genetic variant is exactly, but what I can tell you is that you can't do any polygenic risk scores with 83 genetic variants. I'm just talking very factually right now. So for example, if you want to know what your predisposition is for any of these things here, let's say homocysteine or ApoB, gut inflammation, we could just look at, these are my risks. So we could look at things like this, egg allergy. And let's see. So in this case, we only looked at 24 genetic variants, and MTHFR is a significant one here. In the case of ApoB, we looked at, let's look at my results, 6,400 variants. So if you're only looking at 80, and we're not looking at these variants just because we want to boast at the number of variants we're looking at. It's just the more variants you look at, the more accurate the results get. For example, if we were to only look at ApoB, this one gene, it shows that I have higher risk here, but these are some top genetic variants. It shows that I don't have these risk alleles. Now you might say that, okay, I don't have these risk alleles. These are some of the most significant genes. Maybe I'm low risk. This puts me at high risk. And let's look at our actual results. So ApoB, even with taking a lot of things, I take a lot of supplements to bring it down, it's still quite high. My ApoB just runs high genetically, and that's the fact. So these are my lab tests. You could see the results here. And this is with me bringing them down. If I didn't bring them down, it would be at 150 or more. So my ApoB runs high genetically. If you only looked at one gene or two genes or five variants, you wouldn't get a good picture. So you're not able to tell much from looking at, let's say if you want to know all these things, gut inflammation, look at how many variants we looked at, it's 41,000. You're not, in this case, I do have a lot of these risk variants here for the top genes. I'm in the 90th percentile. And gut inflammation was one of the things that that really brought me into the health field. And we could look at this and we see that in this case, it's 373 genetic variants. Sometimes it goes up to 1 million or 2 million. I think the most that we have is 2 million. But getting back to this, if we want to look at all of these genetic risks here, if you only look at a few variants, you cannot really tell these things very well, meaning it becomes more of a coin toss if you're only looking at a few variants. So when it comes to your genetics, there's two things that you want to look at. Number one is you want to look at your genetic predispositions, which can be helpful. Number for the future, or also for now, for example, vitamin K, zinc, it tells me what I'm likely to be deficient in, or it could be certain blood markers like homocysteine or ApoB, which are very important, or it could be certain things like gut inflammation and potentially things in the future like cardiovascular disease or different issues in the future. And so you could see, and these are actually all pretty good, accurate recommendations for me, meaning I am more likely to have higher visceral fat. I tested it. So my subcutaneous fat, is actually quite low. That's why I have a very good six pack, but my visceral fat is higher than one would expect given how fit I am. And that's because I have a genetic predisposition, but that also means that I can take it down as well, which is why I would follow the recommendations there. So every report has recommendations. And the first part is the predispositions. The second part is the recommendations. Now, in order to get good recommendations, you need to look at, so each topic is going to be different, right? The philosophy that we have is a bit different than the DNA company, and I'll explain how. So the DNA company has the assumption that for each gene, you want to treat the gene with a recommendation, or it could be multiple genes, but essentially you're treating the gene. What we say is that we don't treat a gene. We look at all the clinical trials that are available for a certain topic. Let's say it's visceral fat. And in this case, you could see there's 23 recommendations. And this is based on the best evidence out there. And so we do is we look at this and we say, okay, here's all the evidence. And then we organize it based on the impact, the evidence, and also any genetic predispositions, specific genetic variants. That's one way we do recommendations. Another way we do recommendations, and this is from the suggested recommendations, is we will look at, you can pick a specific topic. So let's say if we want to get recommendations for gut health, and you can filter it by supplements, it's going to give you a bunch of recommendations. So this is recommendations from me, right? And for each recommendation, you could see what are all the things the recommendation is going to help with. And so what this is doing is it's giving you recommendations based on all of your genetics, either within a certain topic, or you can pick, you know, just based on everything altogether. You can filter it how you would like. And what we're doing is we're looking at all your genetic weaknesses and we're pairing it with the thing that's most likely to work based on the evidence. So probiotics for me is counteracting all of these genetic predispositions, right? And so that means that we're looking at all 400 reports that we have and counting, and we're saying what is the best fit for somebody's genetic risks. And it turns out that for me, probiotics is the best fit for my genetic risks, especially for gut health. And then it also counteracts a suboptimal LDL cholesterol, which I also have. And so there's two ways to get recommendations from your genetics. One is you can either prioritize the recommendations within a given topic. So that could be done with certain genes, or two. And so I'll give you an example of that. Let's say if we go to, so there's two things that really, low mood and gut inflammation were big issues. So let's go to low mood. And you can see I have higher risk, 84,000 genetic variants. Now let's look at the recommendations. There's 53 recommendations. And if we click on something like this, or St. John's wort, we click on 5-HTP. Now 5-HTP really helped me quite significantly, much more than it helped some other people. And it turns out that I have a genetic variant in this tryptophan hydroxylase 2 gene that is associated with depression and inhibits serotonin production in the brain. So this gene affects 5-HTP and the serotonin production in the brain. Essentially, this gene lowers serotonin conversion from tryptophan to 5-HTP. So if I just take a lot of tryptophan, it's not going to be as efficient in converting. So I also take 5-HTP, and there's also a lot of clinical evidence for 5-HTP in improving mood. And you could see that's recommendation number 5. And St. John's wort also helps for another reason, for this dopamine D2 receptor. And so both actually quite help a lot with my mood. And most of the time, people are not going to get this for number 3 or number 5. And the reason I get it is because I have a genetic variant that makes it more likely for me to do well with these. So in terms of the recommendations, the way these recommendations work is that they're prioritized based on specific genetic variants, in part, meaning we look at all the evidence and it can move up or down based on that, but it's not going to move tremendously. You're almost always going to see exercise in the top 5. Because no matter what your genetics is, exercise is basically always going to be one of the most important things you could do to improve your health. If I didn't exercise, even if I took St. John's wort and 5-HTP, my health would still be, it wouldn't make a difference. So if you actually look at this, exercise has 4 impact and an evidence level of 5. So it has the most evidence and also has quite a big impact. In this case, St. John's wort has an impact of 4 and evidence of 4. And this could change a bit based on your genetic variants. But we give all of the recommendations here because theoretically, all of them can still help. Basically, you don't want to treat a gene. You want to look at the condition as a whole. And because you have many genes, and so it's impossible to say based on this specific gene, you're never treating a gene. That doesn't make sense. Because you have hundreds of millions of genes or genetic variants. And so when I say gene, I'm saying genetic variant. It doesn't make sense if you've got 83 genetic variants and you're making recommendations just on 83 variants, you're not going to have 300 million recommendations, right? That doesn't make sense. You have really 3 billion variants, but you actually have 300 million SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms in the world population. And so it doesn't make sense for you to have a recommendation for each one, or else you might take a million supplements or whatever. So what you have to do is you have to look at the condition, because conditions are also quite complex. As you could see from here, we're looking at 84,000 genetic variants, and this doesn't even account for all the genetics, right? There's still a lot of work with genetics. This is definitely only a percentage of the genetic cause, and this is not even related to the lifestyle cause, this is the genetic cause. And so you have to look at the condition itself and look at all the clinical trials that double-blind placebo-controlled clinical trials that support, you know, something to help, for example, low mood. It doesn't matter what you, whether it's a DNA company or another company. As I'm concerned, there other companies are acting more or less the same way. Number one is they are making recommendations based on specific genetic variants rather than the condition as a whole. Number two, they are not looking at the way that they're making recommendations is not based on all your genetic predispositions. So if you want a recommendation based on one SNP, or the question is, do you want a recommendation based on 100 million SNPs? And so what we're doing is we're making recommendations based on 100 million SNPs, which is 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times more difficult than just creating a recommendation based on one SNP. I met Kashif, and what I can tell, who's the CEO of the DNA company, and what I can say is that he's very sincere about wanting to promote health and do good. And so I like that, which I can't say for many other companies. And so I would assume that if he's checking for specific variants, the ones he's checking for would be decent variants. But there's a limit in what you can get when you're checking 83 variants. You could be checking 83 variants, and those could be important variants, but there's going to be a limit in what you're going to get from that. Okay, next up. Okay, let's see what we got here. Somebody messaged me in the report. Nidhi says that they looked at 130 biomarkers every 6 months, and the first biohacker they know that sees the value in getting regular labs from India. So I actually just returned from India I take two sets of labs there. And every time I get labs, it's always quite interesting. And I always make changes based on the new information. I also get labs in Tel Aviv as well, Israel, where I am currently. Is SelfDecode able to identify acquired mutations and distinguish them? No, so we're just looking at the mutations that you're born with, essentially, all the SNPs that a person is born with. So somebody's asking about higher sensitivity to oxalates in the report, higher need for calcium, and higher risk in bone health, which is relevant because I'm 25 and I have grave osteoporosis. But can oxalates be a factor in my osteoporosis? Not that I know of. I don't know. Offhand, I don't know if oxalates are a factor in osteoporosis, but you have a higher need for calcium and a higher risk for bone health. I would go to the bone health report and follow all the recommendations there. And if we go to the bone health report, so we can go bone, there's bone health, kidney stones, calcium. So you could go here or you could go here, but let's go here. By the way, for that person who's just starting, I would recommend going through these summary reports, number one, picking those summary reports. I think they mentioned something about ApoE. So that would be on the disease reports. It's going to be ApoE is here. So you would have to get a consult with one of our practitioners or a different practitioner. You can see here that I'm more likely for Parkinson's, and that's something that is important to know. And let's see. Somebody asked, what do I think of spermidine for longevity? There's one clinical trial on cognitive decline. Otherwise, there's no clinical trials.
67% of listeners aren't following the show, so please don't forget to show your support by hitting the follow button now. You'll not only be supporting the show, but also investing in yourself and your health journey, all while helping to keep us ad-free.